While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And very good afternoon, Namibia, and of course, a warm welcome to everyone tuning in from across the country and beyond the borders of Namibia. And whenever I say the beyond the borders of Namibia, do you know that you can listen to Eagle FM wherever you're finding yourself in, whether in Nigeria, perhaps in South Africa, perhaps in Malawi, wheresoever as you download the Eagle FM app. Now, thank you for choosing Eagle FM, the home of informed conversations and credible national dialogue. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and you are tuned into On the Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, the program where today's headlines are examined in their full context. It is Thursday, the 5th of January, 2026, and as the nation steps into the new year, Namibia finds itself navigating a period of heightened public expectations. Of course, early in the beginning of the year, there's so much going on, reflection, scrutiny, questions around governance, accountability, economic resilience, and community well-being are taking center stage. Now, with decisions made now set to influence both immediate outcomes and the country's long-term direction. Right here on the radar, we move beyond the surface level reporting. We unpack policy decisions, explore the motives behind them, and assess their impact on the daily lives of Namibians. That is from bustling urban centers to far-reaching rural communities. In a media landscape shaped by fast paced information and competing narratives, On the Radar remains committed to grounded analysis, informed perspectives, and thoughtful engagement. Our focus is on clarity, on context, and the connection between national developments and lived realities. Now, live from 1300 hours to 1430 Monday through Friday, we bring you expert insight, community voices, and journalism that aims not only to inform you, but to empower meaningful public dialogue as well. Now, you can listen to us via Eagle FM frequencies or stream us via the Eagle FM website or download the Eagle FM app and stay connected through our WhatsApp channel for real-time updates. Now, wherever you're listening from, on the move, at work or at home, stay with us as we examine the issues shaping Namibia's present and influencing its future. Because right here on the radar, perspectives matters and the truth stays firmly within our reach. Let's get right into this discussion. Today, the opening of the legal year at the Supreme Court of Namibia was officiated by President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, which noted is more than a ceremonial moment. It is a reaffirmation of the central role of the law in Namibia's democracy. Now, in the Namibian context, the legal system is the backbone of constitutional governance. Since independence, the rule of law has been one of the country's strongest pillars, ensuring that power is exercised within clear legal limits and that no individual or institution stands above the constitution. Now, the opening of the legal year reminds the nation that justice is not seasonal, neither optional. It is continuous and fundamental. The law in Namibia plays a critical role in protecting rights and freedoms, particularly in a diverse society shaped by historical inequality. Courts serve as a space where citizens, regardless of status, gender, ethnicity, or political affiliation, can seek redress. Now, this is essential in maintaining public trust and social cohesion. Legally, the judicial also acts as a check and balance on the executive and the legislature. And you know, yesterday we spoke about the three arms of law of the government. Now, in a constitutional democracy like Namibia, the separation of powers safeguards against abuse and strengthens accountability and therefore preserves democratic stability. Now, the Supreme Court, as the highest court in the land, carries the responsibility of interpreting the constitution and setting legal precedent that shapes national life. From an economic perspective, a strong legal framework is equally vital, equally important, I must emphasize. Now, investors, businesses, and communities rely on predictable and fair laws to function. And not only that, something that President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah highlighted in a speech today is that a strong legal system also attracts investment. I never actually thought about it like that, but yes, it does. So, and contract enforcement, property rights, labor protections, and dispute resolution all hinge or rely or hang on a credible justice system. Now, without legal certainty, economic growth and development are undermined. So the opening of the legal year also speaks to the ethical responsibility of legal practitioners. And I think that word ethics is very strong, especially when we're talking about legal practitioners, judges, magistrates, advocates, and lawyers to uphold integrity, to uphold independence, and to uphold professionalism. Now, in a time of growing public scrutiny, the judiciary's legitimacy depends not only on legal knowledge, but on public confidence as well. So ultimately, today's event reinforces a simple but powerful truth. The law is not just about cuts and status. It is about the people. It is about fairness, and it's about dignity. It's about accountability and the promise that justice remains accessible to all Namibians. Now, in that sense, the opening of the legal year is a national reminder that democracy lives or dies by the strength of its legal institutions, and that the rule of law remains one of Namibia's greatest democratic assets. Now, of course, let's take a listen to the Deputy Chief Justice, the Deputy Chief Justice is Justice Pietras, but we are not going to take a listen to him, but we are rather going to listen to Chief Justice of the Republic of Namibia, that is Peter Chivute, as he was addressing the crowd at the opening of the legal year. And one particular point that he did point out, of which I think I would, let's come to into what he says after we listen, or in between as we listen. Happy listening.
It's my distinct honor to welcome you to the Supreme Court for the official opening of the 2026 legal year. This ceremony remains an important fixture on our national calendar, not only because it marks the commencement of the judicial year, but because it provides an opportunity for reflection, transparency, and renewal. Allow me at the outset to acknowledge with deep appreciation the presence of Excellency the President of the Republic of Namibia at this occasion. It marks, as we heard before, the first such attendance by Excellency since assuming office of President. Your Excellency's attendance, I would like to believe, affirms the respect accorded to the judiciary within our constitutional order and underscores the state's commitment to judicial independence, the separation of powers, and the centrality of the courts in the protection of rights and freedoms. I also wish to acknowledge the presence of senior members of the executive, as I have already done before, and the legislature, judicial officers, justice. In reviewing the past year, present this morning, your attendance reflects the shared responsibility we bear in sustaining a justice system that serves the people of Namibia. The opening of the legal year is not intended to be ceremonial only. It is rooted in the principles of transparency and accountability. Each year, we take stock of where we are, what we've achieved, where the challenges lie, and our ongoing efforts to strengthen the administration of justice. In reviewing the past year, I will refrain from an exhaustive recital of figures and the statistics. Comprehensive data on the performance of the Supreme Court, High Court, and the lower courts, together with information relating to financial management and human resources for the year under review, are publicly accessible on the Superior Court website. My direction was that that information be made available shortly after my speech. Further information is contained in the Office of the Judiciary's annual reports for past financial years, which are available on its website. I encourage, therefore, not only those present here, but the wider public to engage with these reports. They are not mere administrative documents. They are intended as a clear and honest reflection of how the judiciary is performing. Accountability to the people of Namibia demands nothing less. It's sometimes said, perhaps wisely, that one should begin with difficult news and end on a hopeful note. I therefore begin by outlining the most significant challenges encountered in the past year which regrettably persist. Across all our court levels, case registrations have fluctuated with increases in some categories and decreases in some. Despite this variation, overall registration levels remain high. While this can be attributed to a range of factors, this also reflects something important and positive, I may add. And that is that continued public confidence in the courts as places where disputes are resolved and the rights are vindicated. In a constitutional democracy, such confidence is invaluable and remains a clear sign that the rule of law is alive and trusted. Access to justice lies at the heart of the judiciary's constitutional mandate. However, that is only one side of the coin. Access must be matched by the effective delivery of justice. That delivery requires adequate resources, human, financial, and infrastructural. Without these, access risks becoming theoretical rather than real. Human resources remain one of the judiciary's most immediate and pressing challenges. Judicial officers and support staff are required to manage not only increasing caseloads, but also the ancillary administrative, technological, and procedural demands of a modern justice system. The shortage of judicial officers has reached a critical point. The Supreme Court has recently experienced the retirement of two seasoned career jurists in the persons of Justice Sylvester Mainga, who retired in August 2025, and Justice Alton Hoff, who concluded his service at the end of January this year. The High Court also experienced retirements. Last year, we bid farewell to Judge Herman Worsthuizen and Judge Herman January, the two Hermans. The shortage at the High Court is particularly dire in the civil stream. I indicated earlier that I would avoid statistics, but to convey the gravity of the situation, some numbers are unavoidable. Over the past year, the civil stream of the main division of the High Court has operated under severe and sustained constraints in judicial capacity. Excluding the judge presidents, the civil bench stood at 7 judges, while in the Northern Local Division at Oshakati, a single judge carried responsibility for the entire civil stream. These conditions have placed exceptional demands on judicial officers and the institutional support structures of the court. The impact of these constraints is evident from the caseload data or data across successive legal years. During 2024 legal year, the civil bench of 13 judges managed a total of 4,987 cases, translating into an average workload of approximately 384 cases per judge. In the 2025 legal year, the reduced civil bench managed 4,295 cases. Although the overall number of cases declined only marginally, the average workload per judge rose sharply to approximately 614 cases per judge. This represents an increase of nearly 60% in the average workload per judge. It's a clear indication that judicial officers have been required to carry significantly heavier caseloads in order to maintain the effective functioning of the court and to avert the accumulation of backlogs. This level of productivity has been achieved at a cost with clear institutional implications. The implications are therefore unavoidable. Judges of the High Court in both the criminal stream and the civil stream, together with the court staff who support them, are operating under immense and sustained pressure that underscores the urgent institutional need for adequate judicial appointments and corresponding support if the administration of justice is to remain timely, effective, and resilient. Similar constraints continue to affect the lower courts. The backlog situation remains the most critical challenge confronting the magistrates' courts. The combined backlog increased from 57,090 cases at the end of the 2024 to 63,679 cases in December 2025, representing an 11.5% increase. This growing backlog is occurring against the backdrop of persistent shortages of magistrates, resulting in unsustainable caseloads per judicial officer. The situation is compounded by inadequate staffing levels among administrative personnel, which continue to create bottlenecks in case processing and delay the progression of matters through the system. These pressures are further exacerbated by ongoing budgetary constraints, which limit the court's ability to respond effectively to rising demand. The frustrations expressed by judicial officers are understandable, given the sustained pressures under which they continue to serve. Recent events have drawn attention to these challenges and the need for constructive engagement around them. However, in giving expression to legitimate concerns, judicial officers must remain acutely conscious of the unique constitutional role they occupy. Certain forms of conduct, however well-intentioned, are incompatible with the oath of office and risk undermining public confidence in the judiciary. The courts command authority not only through institutional independence, but also through the restraint, discipline, and dignity with which judicial officers discharge their responsibilities. It is through principled dialogue and institutional processes that such concerns are best addressed. With all that said, I must acknowledge and applaud our judicial officers and the court staff. Your dedication, resilience, and sacrifice do not go unnoticed. The judiciary continues to function because of your commitment, often under conditions that test endurance and resolve. Having outlined some of the most pressing challenges facing the judiciary, I now turn to steps being taken to address them. The aspirant judges training program, revised last year, continues to show promise. A total of 33 participants took part in the program in August 2025 and have demonstrated encouraging progress. Several serving High Court judges are products of this program, demonstrating its long-term value. In parallel, work continues towards the establishment of a judicial training institute, which will strengthen structured judicial education and professional development. I must express appreciation to the legal fraternity who made the sacrifice at the expense of their practices to serve as acting judges during the past year. Your willingness to step into these roles has provided much needed relief to the High Court. At the same time, acting appointments are not a long-term solution. The system, colleagues, requires permanent capacity. I therefore take this opportunity to call upon those suitably qualified to consider availing themselves for judicial service. Judicial office is demanding, but it remains one of the highest forms of public service. The judiciary requires individuals of skill, integrity, and commitment. In this regard, the Judicial Service Commission, as the body mandated to make recommendations on judges' remuneration and conditions of service, is reviewing the existing framework to enhance the attractiveness of judicial service. The legislature, in the exercise of its mandate, continues to enact laws establishing specialized courts. While these developments are necessary and beneficial, they also place additional pressure on an already strained system, with implications for both human and capital resources.
And there we had it from Chief Justice Peter Shivute speaking about a number of issues right there at the opening of the legal year. Indeed, he starts off by noting that the opening of the legal year is not just a ceremonial event, and indeed it shouldn't be, but rather also speaks to transparency and accountability. He spoke about the piling up of case registrations across all courts of Namibia, and it's his desire that it becomes practical not just that Namibians have access to the law, but that access to the law also speaks about them getting justice to that which they bring under the law. So access risks becoming theoretical rather than real when there is a pile up and a lack. Chief Justice Peter Shivute pointed out the shortage of judicial officers that has reached, and he says, a critical point, and that shortage at the High Court has become particularly dire, and that lawmakers are operating under severe constraints at Shakati Court on its own. It was handled by a single judge who carried out work throughout the year. But yes, we have so much more that I could really unpack on what Chief Justice Peter Shivute spoke about. He spoke about backlog situation, which remains a challenge, and continued case delay, frustrations by judicial officers, which he understands the frustration by the judicial officers, that it is understandable, hence a need for constructive engagement around them. But we do have a scheduled commercial break coming up, and we'll be engaging. So let's pause here.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondututo ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana. Ono ngeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado ilinawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ilinawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafelane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Welcome back, and now joining me in studio telephonically is Prof. Marvin Awarab, and he is the Dean of the Faculty of Law and Commerce and Education at the Vilvicha University. A very good afternoon to you, Prof, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, ma'am. Thanks for having me.
Prof, I understand that you have very interesting and good news for us about that's happening at Vilvicha University. We're happy to engage on those.
Yes, we are excited that we have interviewed two new short courses at the Vilvicha University under the Faculty of Commerce, Law and Education, specifically under the School of Law. Traditionally, we speak about the bachelor's programs, which are a four-year qualification or a diploma, which is normally a two-year qualification. We have, in addition to that, now decided to introduce two short courses to ensure that we are able to assist working individuals who might not have the time or even the resources to sit for a four-year qualification or a two-year diploma, just to upskill and reskill their skills and to reach their career goals and objectives. And therefore, we have introduced in that event two short courses within the field of law.
Now, who are those short courses aimed at?
Okay, as I indicated earlier, the two short courses are aimed at individuals who are currently already employed, and they are not within the legal fraternity or the legal discipline per se.
Okay.
However, they have got some form of task that they are required to execute, or within their operations is a legal element or aspect which they should have in order to be able to effectively execute their mandate. For instance, you will find HR practitioners who are dealing with workplace issues, but these persons are trained professionally from an HR perspective and not as lawyers or not as persons with a labor law background. So we are coming in with a legal aspect to aid, for instance, HR practitioners to be able to understand the workings of the law, say when they are dealing with workplace discipline, workplace disputes, labor unrest, what you may have within the workplace setting. So they need that legal understanding or legal expertise, especially from the labor law background, to be able to handle workplace discipline and disputes. In that way, the certificate in workplace dispute resolution comes in handy. Apart from the HR practitioners, we have got trade union members, or those that are working within organizations or companies that deal specifically with issues of labor disputes. They don't need to be HR practitioners. It could be employee relations officers. It could be trade union representatives. Anyone that finds themselves within the sphere of dealing with workplace matters should be eligible and are the target market for the workplace dispute resolution certificate.
Okay. Prof,
And then we have got the certificate in telecommunications policy framework. Now, this particular certificate is aimed at those persons that are dealing with telecommunications or ICT-related matters. They are not, per se, lawyers, or they are not having a legal background or degree, and they are not functioning in the legal space per se. But because telecommunications is now vast and it touches on the aspects of your technological aspects, the economic aspect, as well as the legal aspect. Now, our certificate is designed in such a way that it makes an individual to be well-grounded within the sphere of telecommunications, whether you're working for Telecom Namibia, MTC, Paratus, any telecommunications related industry person should be eligible and as a target market for the telecommunications certificate. So we are marrying the technical aspect with the legal aspect so that you are, when you are dealing with the technical aspects, you are able to understand what are the legal ramifications or consequences for acting in a particular way. So we marry the technology together with the legal aspects and therefore be able to give back to the industry.
Interesting. Prof, tell us, what are the entry requirements for the certificate in workplace dispute resolution, as well as the certificate in telecommunications policy and regulation?
Okay. Now, in order for one to be eligible for admission into either of these two short courses, you must at least have either a grade 12 certificate with a minimum of 18 points and a D symbol in English, or alternatively, you can have grade 11 with a minimum of 22 points and an E symbol in English. So whether it's grade 11 or 12, or even the combination of two.
Okay. How long does each course actually take, and what is the mode of study, since it's for those who are employed?
Okay, the courses are for 3 months. If you look at how we have designed our curricula, it's in such a way that it's, I think if I'm sitting under correction currently because I don't have the curriculum in front of me, but it's 5 to 6 modules and it's running over 3 months with approximately two to three weeks a specific module. But a certificate, holistically speaking, is running for 3 months. And the mode of study is online because we are not talking about the mode of the internet era, the fourth and the fifth industrial revolution and technology. So we are offering our courses strictly for the two certificates fully online. You can study from wherever you are, whether you are sitting in Katima, whether you are in Walvis Bay, Gateman, Orangimon, wherever you may find yourself. It's just a matter of you pressing a button, you log in, and then the delivery of the content will be done fully online within the comfort either of your office or from your home. And the beauty of it is that since we are cognizant that most individuals are working during the day, the courses are offered fully online in the evening. So the classes will run from your 17:30 until around about 21:30, depending on at which timetable slot the specific module has been sorted in. But it is flexible, it's in the evenings, and it's totally after hours.
Okay. Is the 5,500 Namibian dollars fee all inclusive, and how do the installments actually work?
Okay. The 5,500 Namibian dollars is all inclusive. So you get an application form. If you want to apply on hard copy, then you can visit one of our nearest campuses. And you obtain a hard copy application form, you fill it in, you do the payment of 230 Namibian dollars, which is now your application fee. Alternatively, you can go fully online, do your application online, and you just pay the application fee of 230 Namibian dollars. And then upon registration, that's now where you start paying the 5,500. Now the 5,500, you can do it in two ways. If you want, you can do a full payment of 5,500 once off. Alternatively, you can now divide the 5,500 into 3 installments. So 5.5 divided by 3, and then in 3 installments, that's how you can do your payment. So at registration, you pay the first installment, and then the remaining 2 installments, you can pay as you progress with the certificate. By the time you are done with your certificate, then you are also done with the payment.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the no ATM receipt rule mentioned in the poster?
Come again?
What is the no ATM receipt rule mentioned in the poster?
Oh, okay. So our payment works in such a way that we don't accept cash, number one, and we also don't want persons to go to the ATM and do the payment in ATM. Rather, go inside the bank and do the payment inside the bank, or as long as you do an EFT transfer, and then you just provide us with a proof of payment.
Okay. Prof, are those courses accredited?
Our short courses are not yet accredited. As I indicated in the beginning of the interview, the idea is not for you to be able to articulate using these courses at the moment. Obviously, in the pipeline, in the future, we could potentially make them postgraduate courses, which you'll be able to specialize and articulate into other fields of study. However, at the moment, the courses are not accredited. It's simply meant for bridging the skills gap. You are coming from telecommunications. You know the technology, but you just want to understand how the law regulates the technology you are working with. Or you are coming from the HR background. You want to understand how the law informs the work of HR practitioner. So at the moment, no, it's not accredited, but we are working in progress. In the future, who knows? It might be fully accredited with MQA. But for now, it's simply skills development.
Okay. And how do I apply, and what or when is the deadline?
Okay. Currently, our applications are still running until the end of this month. So until the 28th of February, that's when applications are running. However, we are a bit behind with our deadline because remember, this course was supposed to start already beginning of the year. So I will advise anyone who is interested in applying and who is eligible and who meets the requirement to apply at least before the 23rd of February, because our first module is set to start running from the 23rd of February. So though applications are only closing end of Feb, I really encourage interested persons and participants to apply at least before the 23rd of February so that you can join the cohort that is starting now in February. However, those that might not meet the deadline lose hope, because this is a recurring course. So after the first 3 months, again, there will be another call that will be starting somewhere, I think, in around about May. So it's a course that is designed to run at least 3 times per year.
Mm-hmm.
So those that might not meet the deadline now, they can still join the second intake that is most likely to take place in May or June. But I really encourage all those that are eligible and who meet the requirements to rush and apply before at least the 23rd of Feb. Now, how you can do the application is that you can either go to our website, www.wu.edu.na, and then you just follow the steps online, and then you can submit your application online. You do the payment and also just attach the proof of payment. In an unfortunate event where you are unable to apply online, you can visit our campuses throughout the country, get a hard copy application, and still do the application manually. Once you get it, you will process it. But I encourage people to at least try to see if they can apply online, because online applications are less cumbersome, both for the university as well as for the applicant. Is just on top, in front of your computer, you do the application and you submit. But we don't turn away the walk-ins and those that apply in person. So if you are unable to apply online, you're also welcome to visit our offices across the country, our campuses, either the main campus in Windhoek or all the other satellite campuses, and they can submit the application.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Prof. Marvin Awarab, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News and Analysis.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay.
Enjoy the rest of the day.
Okay, thank you, Prof. And there you had it from Prof. Marvin Awarab, who is the Dean for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, that is at the Vilvicha University. Of course, he was talking to us and telling us about the 2 short courses that have been introduced at Vilvicha University, one being the Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution, as well as the Certificate in Telecommunications Policy and Regulation, intended for those who are working in this field. And it is a three-month course, which is only $5,500 per course. Of course, let's pause here now, take a trip to the marketplace, and we'll be back to interrogate the news that we were busy with right before we left. Stay tuned. This is on the Reader News Analysis. Now, should you also be interested in partaking in the news, please dial on 083 0800-288-401. That is the number in studio. Please go ahead and engage us right there. Perhaps you do have questions for us. Also, just go ahead and do that. Yep. And let's pause here now. Take a trip to the marketplace.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okwene ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Okay, now let's go back to analyzing what Chief Justice Peter Chivute spoke about at the legal opening or at the opening of the legal year. Now, they speak about a single bench managed an increase of nearly 60% in the workload. And this obviously has implications which are unavoidable. And that they are operating under immense pressure that requires timely appointment. So one emphasis he did speak about is timely appointment and constructive engagement around such matters that he did analyze out, in that the court commands authority though restrained, says the administration of justice is a shared national responsibility. Indeed, all of us have our parts to play in administration of justice, even if it's by being compliant to the law, because remember, nobody is above the law. Therefore, the judiciary must operate free from undue interference. But for now, let's take a listen to the president, that is President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, as she delivered her speech at the opening of the legal year. Now, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah also gave a speech, and in fact, she really gave a thorough one in terms of the law, or in terms of legal law. Now, she echoed this word that where law stands firm, society stands strong. And she noted that the opening of the 2026 year as well, she noted, as well as the Chief Justice noted similarly, that it is not just a ceremony, but a reflection and a commitment to the rule of law that binds us together as one Namibian people. Now, she gave credit to First President of the Republic of Namibia, that is Dr. Sam Shafishana Nujoma, who, she said, at the dawn of independence, recognized the fundamental importance of the separation of powers and championed the establishment of an independent and impartial judiciary, where he, President Sam former president, the former first president of the Republic of Namibia, Dr. Sam Shafishuna Nujoma, reaffirmed at the opening of the Supreme Court in 1990 that the Supreme Court will interpret laws made by democratically elected representatives of the Namibian people, and that laws that reflect the inspiration of the Namibian people. The president, President Ahonetse Mbonandi Ndaitwah, said that this is a reminder that the law is not an abstract ideal, but a living covenant between the state and its people. Almost sort of to say the law is a living thing, which actually makes sense. Now she was further heard echoing, and I think this is the word for today. Where law stands firm, society stands strong. And that is indeed true, that when law is standing firm without impartiality, judging by the rule of law, without taking sides, regardless of who the person is, their status, their class and whatnot, when law stands firm, indeed it is a strong society that we then build. Let's now take a listen to President Ahonetse Mbonandi Ndaitwah and the speech she delivered.
Me as a law-binding citizen of Namibia and who believes and respects guidelines, I respect the guidelines of our director of ceremonies and stand sincerely on the protocol established and jump my 1.5 page. Today we gathered at the heart of our constitutional democracy to mark the opening of the 2026 legal year, a moment that calls us not only to a ceremony, but to reflection, renewal and recommitment to the rule of law that binds us together as one Namibian people. In this solemn and significant space, I reflect on the wisdom and the leadership of our founding president and father of the Namibian nation, His Excellency Dr. Sam Shafishuna Nujoma, may his soul rest in eternal peace, who, at the dawn of our independence, recognized the fundamental importance of the separation of powers and championed the establishment of an independent and impartial judiciary. Through his visionary leadership, Article 78 of the Namibian Constitution enshrined the independence of the judiciary, and in 1990, the Supreme Court of the Republic of Namibia was formally opened. On that historical occasion, President Nujoma affirmed those enduring words, and I quote, "This honorable court will interpret laws made by the democratically elected representative of the Namibian people. This honorable court will interpret laws that reflect the inspiration of the Namibian people," end of the quote. Those words continue to echo across the generation, reminding us that the law is not an abstract ideal, but a living covenant between the state and its people. There is an ancient principle drawn from the earliest tradition of human civilization that teaches us that where the law stands firm, society stands strong. Where the law stands firm, society stands strong. From the earliest code, that sought to bring order and fairness on human conduct to the enduring belief that justice must always prevail. History reminds us that nations endure not by strengthening of their armies or the wealth of their treasure, but by the trust their people placed in the fairness and integrity of their laws. It is for this reason that we must never allow that trust to erode. For when confidence in the law is lost, uncertainty takes its place. And where uncertainty prevails, peace and progress. And where uncertainty prevails, peace and progress cannot flourish. It is therefore with honor and deep sense of responsibility that I join the judiciary today, as mentioned by the Chief Justice, for the first time since my inauguration as the fifth President of the Republic of Namibia on the 21st March 2020 under the 8th Administration. This occasion not only marks the opening of the 2026 legal year, but also provide a meaningful opportunity for engagement, dialogue, and mutual understanding, always in a manner that respects and upholds the constitutional independence of the courts. This annual gathering also serves as a moment of reaffirming our unwavering commitment to justice, the role of law, and the values enshrined in our Constitution. It reminds us the critical role the judiciary plays in shaping our democratic destiny and safeguarding the rights and freedom of every person who calls Namibia home. I therefore take this opportunity to extend my heartfelt congratulations to you, Your Lordship, Chief Justice Peter Chivute, and Your Lordship, Deputy Chief Justice Petrus Damasem, for your leadership, foresight, and administration steadfast of, and the administration of our judicial system. Equally, I recognize the dedication, the resilience, and tireless service of the esteemed members of the legal professional, our judges at all levels, magistrates, prosecutors, and legal practitioners whose daily work advance access to justice, strengthen constitutional democracy, and sustain peace and social cohesion across our nation. Despite the challenges and constraints that confronted our judiciary system, our judiciary has remained steadfast in its independence, diligence in the administration of justice, and result in strengthening public confidence in the rule of law. And the report we have just received from the Chief Justice really underlined this point. Director of Ceremonies, the judiciary stands as the moral and constitutional compass of our democracy. Our Constitution, as the supreme law of the land, vests judicial power in the courts, ensuring that justice is administered independently without favor, fear, or prejudice. The courts are entrusted with the interpretation and application of laws, the protection of fundamental rights, and the peaceful resolution of disputes. In doing so, they give practical meaning to the promises of equality before the law for all Namibians. The court also plays a vital role in our national development agenda as articulated in NDP 6, which commits our nation to build a safe and secure country with equitable access to justice and a firm adherence to the rule of law. Good governance, socio-economic development, and culture of accountability rest upon the foundation of a strong and effective judiciary. As one of the three co-equal arms of the state, the judiciary must operate free from undue influence, whether from the executive, the legislature, or any other external force. It is an acceptable norm that legal professionals are people of highest integrity who cannot be compromised, a principle that has to be respected at all times. As any feeling that a certain decision taken by our courts is considered to be based on negative influence, that will be the greatest threat to our democracy and to the protection of our people. We must know the independence of the judiciary is not a privilege granted by government, but a constitutional duty owed to the people of Namibia. At the same time, our democracy is built on the principle of the separation of power, not as a system of isolation, but as a framework for respectful collaboration in the national interest. Together, the organs of state must work in harmony to uphold the rule of law, protect economic growth, and advance the shared vision of a prosperous and just Namibia. Socio-economic progress cannot take root in the absence of peace and justice. Likewise, constrained and unequal developments undermine social stabilities and erode public confidence in institutions of governance. A strong judiciary fosters an environment that is conducive to investment, innovation, and opportunities. It reassures investors, protects the valuable and vulnerables, and enable the realization of Namibia's developmental aspiration. Where the rule of law is weakened, corruption, crime, and impunity find space to grow, and public trust begin to fade. For this reason, access to justice as a fundamental human right must be granted to all, regardless of gender, race, socio-economic status, geographical location, and others. Justice must not only be done, but it also must be seen to be done. Director of Ceremony, as we affirm the independence and the role of the judiciary, we must also confront the threats that undermine its effective operation. In recent times, the safety and security of judges, magistrates, prosecutors, and legal practitioners have become a matter of concern. I welcome the establishment of a task force to review those security challenges, and I urge that this work be concluded as a matter of urgency. No officer of the court should be required to discharge their duties under fear, intimidation, or threat. And this must be a national concern and a national responsibility to protect these officials that have such a critical role to play in our society. Where dissatisfaction arises with a judicial decision, our justice system provides lawful avenue for appeal and review. No individual or a group should ever take the law into their own hands. We are a country of the rule of law. Respect for the courts is respect for our own constitutional order. When we are respecting our laws, we are respecting our constitution. And no single Namibian, I believe, wants to violate or undermine our constitution. Director of Ceremonies, I'm also concerned by recent reports of increased criminal acts against the visitors and tourism in our country. Some nations have even begun to classify Namibia as an unsafer destination for their citizens. This trend poses a serious risk and a threat to terror to tourists, which remains one of the leading contributors to our gross domestic product and a vital source of employment for many Namibians. And as arms of the state, we need to work together in order to ensure that our credibility as a country remains. Our court must continue to grant equitable access to justice for all, regardless of nationality, and ensure that those who commit crimes are held accountable under the law. A trusted and effective justice system strengthens Namibia's reputation internationally as a safe, reliable, and welcoming destination. Director of Ceremonies, the 8th Administration, guided by the clear expectation of our people that we must effectively deliver service and deliver with purpose, is hard at work to improve the living standard of our people. Namibians expect equitable and timely access to justice. They expect cases to be heard and concluded within reasonable time frame. The backlog of cases is a long-standing challenge that must be addressed with urgency and resolve. Some of those matters involves the abuse of public resources. When such cases remain unresolved for extended period, public confidence in our institution is weakened, and our national development efforts are compromised. I therefore call upon all stakeholders in the legal fraternity to work together to turn this situation around. in pursuit of justice and accountable Namibians in alignment with Vision 2030, Agenda 2063 of the African Union, and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal 16, which is on peace, justice, and strong institutions. Director of Ceremonies, the Eighth Administration reaffirms it is unwavering commitment to supporting a strong, independent, and active judiciary. We will continue to strengthen alternative dispute resolution mechanism and address persistent challenges related to budgetary allocation, human resources, and infrastructure development within our means. Those matters demand a coordinated and decisive action from all stakeholders. I also take note with appreciation of the resolution of the recent matter concerning the striking of magistrate, which had brought legal services to a temporary standstill. The restoration of normal judiciary operations is essential to maintain public trust and institutional accountability. Director of Ceremonies, we must ensure that our legislative and regulatory framework are strong, transparent, and inclusive, so that our natural resources are managed in a manner that benefits all Namibians today and for generations to come. In this context, upon assuming office, I directed that any law requiring amendment or repeal be forwarded to the Ministry of Justice and Labor. This initiative is intended to enhance effective service delivery, promote local beneficiation, and ensure that our legal framework remains responsive, inclusive, and aligned with the aspiration of our people. Director of Ceremony, as I conclude, I extend once again my sincere gratitude to the judiciary and to all members of the legal fraternity for your steadfast commitment to administrating justice without fear, favor, or bias, in accordance with the Constitution of the Republic of Namibia and the laws of our land. I reaffirm the unwavering support of the executive to the judiciary, always within the bounds of our constitutional framework. Let us continue to work together in our respective roles to build a Namibia where justice is accessible to all, where the rule of law reigns supreme, and where the rights and freedom of every person are protected and cherished. May the wisdom guide our judgment, courage, inspiration our action, and integrity echo on institution. Let there be justice and peace for all. Together, let us build a just Namibia where the law is shield for variable and guiding for strong. I wish you all a productive, successful, and transformative 2026 legal year, and I thank you for your kind attention.
Wow. Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Indeed, President Netumbonane Ndaitwah speaking at the opening of the legal year, noting that judiciary must operate free from undue interference, and the independence of judiciary is not a privilege granted by the government, but is rather something that is there for the benefit of the Namibian people. Now, a strong judiciary fosters an inclusive environment where investors can also then be encouraged to come and invest within our land of the brave. And she also noted out that safety has become a matter of concern, indicating that this has become a matter of urgency. Safety of those working in the judiciary, safety of those who are dealing with the law has become a matter of concern. Of course, we do know about a situation that not so long ago, or perhaps let me say last year, not so long ago, might not be really the right terminology, but last year that happened, of which a judge was then poured acid upon and also shot, who is currently still receiving medical attention. Now, of course, let's pause here and we'll further interrogate this more in the course of the week. Not necessarily this particular week, as the week is almost coming to an end, but we'll definitely be looking out and pointing out to some of those aspects that the President and Chief Justice Peter Chivute all spoke about. Another point that I actually wouldn't want to not speak about is that the President noted that it has become a matter of concern that other countries are now concerned for their citizens coming to Namibia because of criminal cases or tourists being targeted by criminals right here in the land of the brave. Even though Namibia is known to be a very safe country, or a very safe haven for tourists coming from abroad, but indeed she did highlight and note this, point this out, which then becomes not a good picture for tourists who are intending to come to the land of the brave. But let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be telling you what's happening in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia, let's start off in South Africa, whereby the city of Johannesburg is planning to shut down illegal operating businesses. Let's take a listen to that one.
The operating businesses have been uncovered inside Johannesburg Social Housing Company, or JOSHCO, buildings in the inner city following a multi-agency raid led by MMC for Human Settlements, Councillor Mlungisi Mabaso. Mabaso has condemned what he described as a blatant defiance by the unlawful operators, some of whom owe hundreds of thousands of rands in unpaid rent. He says these businesses will be given 3 months' notice to vacate the premises so the spaces can be allocated to legitimate tenants. Now, during that raid, several operators claimed they had been paying rent to unnamed individuals and initially refused to leave, raising further concerns about criminal syndicates exploiting public housing infrastructure.
We came here today to do an inspection and also to
in signing an
on the people that are trading within our commercial spaces. What we have learned with this building is that we've got 11 commercial spaces and all of them are operated by foreign nationals. Of which we do not understand why we issued lease agreements to the foreign nationals only, while we've got South Africans who have made applications as well to get spaces to run their businesses from our entity. But second to that, these people that are trading here, combined, they are owing us more than 2.5 million. They've made payment arrangement. They've signed the acknowledgement of debts. But with the amount that they are paying, it does not demonstrate people who are willing to settle the money that they are owing to the entity, which is Joshko. So there is one that is paying less than 5,000. He's owing us almost 600,000. And when you do your calculations, it's going to take him 7 years to settle the debt, outside the monthly rental that you are still expecting from him. And his lease agreement is coming to an end in the next 2 years. Then he tells you that this person is going to leave, having not settled the money that is owing to the municipality. And that's why we are shutting them down, because they are owing us a lot of money. They have no ability to pay, and yet they are continuing to trade in our spaces. They are employing foreign nationals, and they are not contributing in anyhow. They are not contributing in the coffers of the municipality. They are not contributing in the economy of the city of Johannesburg. They are not assisting us to address the issues of unemployment. And we do not see a reason why we should allow them to continue to trade in our spaces. And that's why we are shutting them down, all of them.
Meanwhile, Botswana's jam has become keen to creating a lasting impression.
You're standing next to a soccer field, which is, a lot of people will tell us it's your first love. Talk to us about your attraction to the game of football, and how it was almost difficult for you to change and find another second love later in your life as a 13-year-old.
Yeah, man. Football was my first love. It's something that I loved. I really enjoyed doing. And even today, I still have that love for and passion for football. But unfortunately, I just can't keep playing it anymore because of the career that I just chose and took. But it was really a nice part for me as a left winger. Attacking and coming back has been that for me, and it was really, really, really nice. And I enjoyed it more than anything else. And then later on, becoming a track star, it became more and more difficult for me to just stay away from football. And then eventually I just had to decide and just stop football for a while.
Let's talk about that decision when you left football and you joined athletics. Who inspired you? Who basically took you out and said, this is what I've seen you, please concentrate a bit more on this?
It was mostly the school coaches. They saw I had true potential in athletics, but I had the love for football more than anything else. So what happened was they just asked me to just try athletics just for a year and see how it goes. And then I went back home, sat down with my relatives, our family members, and we talked it through, and we had a discussion about the whole thing. And then we were like, okay, now it's time for us to take, let's try this for 4 years. If it doesn't work out, then you can go back to doing your football.
You talk about important people that helped make certain decisions in your life. There's an important gentleman called Coach Doss. He's been an inspirational figure in terms of getting the best out of you. He has managed to get you calm in difficult times. Talk about that relationship.
For Doss, he's more than a coach to us. He's their father figure. He plays all the roles that a father figure can play. He also plays the role of a coach for us. And not just him inspiring us, the teammates also play a critical role, because during the time when we had a big hurdle, when my mom passed away, they helped me get from my step up and just be up my game again.
Let's talk about that moment. That must have been a difficult one, because your mom was also someone who was very close to you.
Yeah.
And also when the news broke, you were not close to home, you were far from home, but you needed people like Coach Doss and your teammates to basically say, focus, go try your best for your mom, and make her proud.
Yeah, it was really a tough moment for me. It wasn't just for me, for the coach, for the team, for everybody who was just there around us, who interacted with her on a daily basis. And it was really, really a tough situation for us. But thanks to the teammates again for helping me cover up and get and recover from the tragedy, with that bit of motivation to just try and force me up to up my game and just be up there and do it again.
You know, people talk about Usain Bolt as being one of the greatest athletes in modern day athletics. But you have an inspirational story where you sat and you get just broken into the professional ranks, and Usain Bolt was at the back end of his career. He almost inspired people like you. You saw Wayde van Niekerk, for example, breaking the world record. Talk to me about those the people like that who have always whispered in your ear and said, you can do this. Believe in your talent. Run as fast as you can.
I mean, Usain Bolt really played a critical role. He inspired a lot of us. We wanted to be up like him, dominate for the longest possible. And for us, that's still the mandate even today, that we want to dominate the sport as much as possible and bring it back to Africa, because they've been doing it in the Jamaicans, the Americans. So now we need to bring it into Africa and dominate for quite a long time, because it's not just about Botswana, it's about the African, the way we try and unite.
You saw the welcome you got when you came back with the medal.
Yeah.
What's a goal this time?
Yeah, that's still the goal. That's still we want to bring as many gold medals as possible back into the country. And we don't want to have that dry up of athletes in Botswana where they don't have, we don't have athletes in the next 2-3 years. So we're still trying to bring as many juniors as possible. And I believe on next year, May 2026, when we have the world relays, we're going to see a lot of youngsters being filled on the 4x4.
Restoration of Business Confidence, U.S. chapter of the South African Chamber of Commerce, has welcomed the reauthorization of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, that is ANGOWER, until the end of the year.
New government funding deal into law. President Trump also reauthorized AGOA for 1 year, backdated until September last year, a move described as having a stabilizing effect for South Africa.
Over the past few months, uncertainty created concern and real concern for companies managing long-term contracts, investors assessing opportunities and risk, and workers whose livelihoods depend on the AGOA framework. This decision removes a lot of that uncertainty and the cloud that was hanging over business, restoring some business confidence within a framework that business can operate. We need to be clear, it doesn't remove the tariff regime that has been implemented, especially reciprocal tariffs, but it at least gives us a breath of air in an environment where we need to continue bilateral trade between South Africa and the United States.
The U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer said his office would work with relevant U.S. agencies to give effect to any modifications made to the harmonized tariff schedule of the United States as a result of AGOA's reauthorization. The reciprocal tariffs imposed by President Trump last August appear to undercut AGOA's benefits, although the legality of those unilateral levies remain the subject of a legal review by the Supreme Court after two lower courts already ruled them illegal, creating an additional layer of confusion in terms of exactly what the road ahead looks like.
We know that South Africa is the largest beneficiary under AGOA for sub-Sahara Africa, specifically in key sectors such as automotive manufacturing, agriculture and agro-processing, wine and value-added food products, and then industrial and manufactured components. Where we've been subject to those tariffs, AGOA is really going to give us some relief from those tariffs. Exactly how this plays out will be dependent on an engagement between the U.S. Trade Representative Jamie Greer, as well as Minister Park Stow and the team from the Department of Trade and Industry. But we at least see this as a step in the right direction, restoring business confidence in the U.S.-South Africa economic relationship.
Based on X by the principal deputy spokesperson of the State Department, Tommy Pigott, sharply criticized South Africa's decision to expel a senior Israeli diplomat from the country as another example of its poor foreign policy choices. After Durko declared the Israeli charge d'affaires persona non grata for what it referred to as a series of unacceptable violations of diplomatic norms, raising questions about how the diplomatic relationship between Washington and Pretoria could impact the economic relationship moving forward, with any country's continued inclusion in AGOA now at the behest of the U.S. president, who's empowered to exclude or suspend a country from the trade pact.
AGOA determinations, South Africa still remains eligible, but that eligibility is not automatic. It is subject to certain statutory and regulatory requirements, and that relates around to market access, trade openness, but also South Africa's foreign policy. And I think that is where economics and business becomes clouded. We'd like to stay as business out of the political environment, but we do encourage both governments for the sake of our bilateral trade and the benefit to both our countries to resolve those diplomatic issues.
Diamond said he viewed continued engagement around a bilateral trade agreement between Pretoria and Washington as moving in the right direction, while expressing optimism that a new modernized AGOA could be extended beyond the current December 31st deadline, with any signals from the White House and the trade representative being watched very closely. Shovan Brysby's SABC News, New York.
And with that, we have now come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by Matthias Hangara. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye. I'll see you again same time tomorrow. I'll see you again tomorrow, same time, same place, right here for On the Radar News Analysis.